You're listening to Smart Talk. I'm Scott Lamar. Over the course of the coronavirus pandemic, perhaps education has been the aspect of our lives that has been disrupted the most. The end of the 2019-20 school year and the entire 2020-21 year have been unlike any schools, teachers, and students have ever experienced. In most cases, educators have tried their best to conduct classes either in person, with masking and social distancing required, or online, or a combination of both. Even with the innovation and lots of imagination, the conditions were not conducive for learning like in a normal class setting. Some students and parents handled the unusual circumstances better than others. Parents have been given the option of holding their child back a year. Still others are concerned about what's been described as learning loss during the past year and a half. Those are the topics of our discussion on today's program. Joining us today, Dr. Bernard Harris, CEO of the National Math and Science Initiative. Dr. Harris is a medical doctor, med tech investor, and a former NASA astronaut. In 1995, Dr. Harris became the first African American to complete a spacewalk. Also joining us, Lindsay Sturkey, Senior Director of Programs with Communities in Schools of Pennsylvania. And Dr. Lauren Beal, Lancaster-Lebanon Intermediate Unit 13 and selected as a Pennsylvania STEM Ambassador. I want to welcome all three of you to the program and start with a very broad question. And Dr. Harris, I'll go to you first. Have our schools ever faced the kind of challenge that they're facing right now?
So, Scott, thank you for having me on the show today. I would say unequivocally, no. COVID has really turned our education system around, upside down, I should say. And in some cases, many school districts have struggled mightily as we are in and out of schools. Teachers are now being required to both do face-to-face and also online. And that has provided a tremendous challenge for our educational system.
Lindsay Sturkey, this question kind of is like a status of our schools right now in Pennsylvania. Have they ever faced a challenge like this? And what are some of the challenges being faced this fall by schools?
Absolutely not. I think we can unequivocally say that nothing like this has ever happened before. And unfortunately, one thing it has done is to really highlight the disparities that exists with our students and their families already. With our site staff that we have in school buildings who work one-on-one with students, we're seeing an incredible increase just in need for basic items like clothing, coats, medical care, food, people struggling with housing inequality. All of these things have gotten so much worse through the course of the pandemic, and only naturally it's incredibly impacted their learning.
And if I could chime in and second what Lindsay just said, it has really uncovered issues and inequity with access to high quality instruction. So when we had periods of remote learning, which occurred pretty frequently last school year, there were many families across the Commonwealth who did not have high speed internet and couldn't video chat in with their teacher. And that as a result caused huge gaps in student learning for our learners across the state of Pennsylvania.
Absolutely.
Those inequities that that you're talking about, Dr. Harris, as our other guests have mentioned, that what this has done, it has really highlighted those inequities in a bad way, in a negative way. You know, some of the responses are that there could be an infrastructure package from the federal government here very soon that does include more high speed internet, broadband, expanded broadband internet. But for those students who didn't have access or were experiencing firsthand some of those issues that Lindsay Sturkey brought up, like food, clothing, maybe not having a parent at home. And what has the last year and a half done to those students and their learning?
It has created a tremendous gap in educational opportunities for poor, for kids in the rural area, for Black and Latino, and even female students are all being impacted. So those gaps that we inherently saw, even when things were not as bad as they are now being additive due to just the strain of COVID. And remember, COVID doesn't just affect our educational system, as already Lindsay and already said, it's impacted our communities, how our families are dealing with that, and just in their day-to-day life, which we know from a number of studies impacts learning. And so if you put that all together, we are really in unprecedented times. And it's going to cause us to have a concerted effort, not only from the federal government, but also from the state government and from our leaders, to look at this differently and much differently than they have in the past.
Dr. Harris, I want to read you a quote. This quote said that one of the things, maybe the priority for schools, said it's in the reckoning of the social, emotional, and psychological toll of the last 12 months, and I think we can expand that to the last 16 months. Would you agree with that? That, I mean, academics, obviously that is very, very important. That's the priority, teaching kids. But you have to take all these things into consideration when they return to school.
You do. And I'm just going to emphasize a point that's already been said. If they return to school, yeah. Because with the Delta variant and now the Lambda variant, that is put into jeopardy whether we are going to return to some semblance of normal. I think that many school districts have decided that, you know, that the gaps that we experienced, the loss in learning that the students experienced last year, we just cannot have that happen again. So we're going to be trying to do face-to-face because we know that's a better way in which to teach our children. But nevertheless, we have to deal with the realities of today. And so we're going to have to come up with innovative ways in which to teach our children, which are both positive and negative, you think about this application of technology that we are now applying.
Okay, I think we lost them. We'll try to get it back in just a moment. Dr. Buell, what did classrooms look like last year or for the past 16 months, and what will they look like this fall?
So I would definitely describe last year's classrooms as flexible learning spaces because teachers were continually pivoting on a dime to accommodate to the variety of needs of their learners, whether they were struggling with sickness of their own and missing multiple weeks of school, whether they were struggling emotionally with the stress of the pandemic and the academic demands, but also servicing the students who are face-to-face. And so I think flexibility is really the word that describes the classrooms of last year. I would say moving forward, every year as educators, students enter our class that first day of school with a variety of readiness levels and a variety of academic needs. And I think that's just going to be compounded going into next school year. We are going to have students who are right on pace. They had a successful year, whereas we had other students who have missed multiple weeks of school, or if not months of school, if not the year itself. And so it will really be up to teachers to be using data, to be frequently assessing students, to be, you know, speaking to their students informally, to get a feel for where they are, what do they know, how are they feeling, and differentiating like we've never done before in our classrooms.
Lindsay Sturkey, your organization, Communities in Schools, all three of you, your organizations that you're involved with, that community is very important. I see that word mentioned often with all three of you. What role does the community have in helping these kids, and not just the students, but the students, the teachers, the educators, everyone returning to school?
Yeah, so at Communities in Schools, you know, what we really try to do is to turn our schools into a place, you know, a, just an additional place for them that the whole community can utilize. So our site staff will work with other organizations to broker services, to bring providers into the school if that's what students and their families are needing. Just making sure that we are doing everything we can to make connections in the community to provide additional wraparound supports that we know these students need that they may not otherwise have access to.
Let's talk a little bit about some of the nuts and bolts of the classroom this fall. Okay, we'll start with learning loss. How would you, Dr. Harris, how would you describe learning loss?
Yeah, I would define it as the inability of kids to access adequate learning. And as I mentioned before, we understand that the best way in which to engage a child is face-to-face. That high-touch interaction that occurs in the classroom with our educators is so important, especially for the younger ages. Now, we're forced to use technology, and technology was okay, except for a lot of our school systems. Our educators were not prepared to use technology, so they were in a learning curve. At the same time, our students who needed to access didn't have access. So it created this tremendous gap that we've been talking about all morning. And that contributes to the learning loss that we've seen all across this country.
Lindsay Sturkey, how will we know what students have lost?
I think it will come down to just the kind of conversations and how we can re-engage them throughout this upcoming school year. One thing that we focus on in CIS land is tier two interventions. So those are small groups of peers. So our hope would be is if students are back in the classroom fully, that we can once again have these small groups and just get students talking to each other. Like Dr. Harris mentioned, it's not just the learning loss, you know, from the teacher student, it's student to student as well. These kids have missed out on over a year of just interacting with their peers. They haven't had maybe as many people to talk to because they aren't seeing their classmates or friends or family members. So if we're able to get students back into these small groups to get them to re-engage, to really get them to feel like they're in a comfortable space where they can feel confident enough to share how they really feel and what's really going on, I think that's going to be so important, the social emotional wellness piece of things.
Okay, the academic side though. I mentioned a standardized test earlier, and there still will be plans for students to take tests, but will there be a way to measure what students have lost, Lindsay?
I think so. I think certainly, you know, data that teachers will be collecting and school social workers or school psychologists will be collecting as they check in with their students, and, you know, on a more quantifiable basis, certainly we will see differentiation in standardized test scores. Absolutely.
But is that a good or a bad thing? I mean, as we let's face it, if there's a student who, you know, in a normal classroom setting would be doing well, but maybe didn't have access to the internet while they were away, and got behind a little bit. And so is it fair to measure two students, one who had internet access, one who may not have, but in a normal setting, you know, would be doing just as well as one another? Is it fair to do it that way?
I'll chime in. We're really trying to get away from the misconception that assessments can be punitive. And so really the purpose of an assessment, the purpose of data in education is really to inform us to move students forward at whatever point they are. And so I'll comment too on the term learning loss. That was a very popular word in my vocabulary, you know, a year ago, 6 months ago. And as we approach next school year, I'm really transitioning our language away from learning loss, which feels so negative and overwhelming, to this idea of rebounding and accelerating. Because we all know that there's been learning loss. We know that our students now have a disparity between those who have had a very productive year versus those that have not. But now it's really us as educators to figure out how do we close that gap. And so instead of focusing on the learning loss, how do we focus on the rebound and the acceleration? I think that the data and the assessments, regardless of the students' experience last year, will be absolutely critical in a positive way so that we know what students know, what they don't know, what their successes are, what their challenges are, so that we can meet their needs. And to me, that's a positive.
Okay.
Scott, if I can chime in here. Assessments are certainly important, and they've certainly been controversial for many, many years, through several different administrations. And the controversy comes on how do we use assessments to move our kids forward? So I think the same thing applies here. I'm all for assessing, but we may not be able to use that assessment the way we used it in the past, and we've got to look at it a little bit differently than we have done. And so I'm hoping that those in the various school districts around the country and those who are responsible for, you know, setting policy will take that into account. So you can't just flip the switch and say, okay, things are back to normal, and now we're going to use assessment the same way we did, because of all the things you just mentioned, the disparities in the communities across the nation.
I love that. I'm sitting here nodding my head because I think that's so true. And so how can we use the assessment data to personalize learning for students? How do we meet them and their needs? And how do we take into account their interests so that they are engaged in the learning? Again, so that we can goal set and we can learn and grow so that next year does start to accelerate and fill in those gaps.
You know, it's something that you all three of you have mentioned, or at least alluded to, is that it seems like we will need more meeting students where they are and doing it in a more personalized way than more so than in a group setting. Dr. Pio, am I accurate in describing it that way, that these students coming into class this year are going to need more one-on-one instruction or maybe small group instruction compared to a classroom of 20, 25, 30 kids in the past?
Yeah, there's a lot of research on the impact that personalized learning and small group instruction and differentiated instruction can have on student learning outcomes. And so for years, my organization has been supporting teachers in doing that. What happened over the last year is it's really forced them to accelerate their ability to differentiate and personalize learning. A point that I want to make, too, that I think is a really critical point going into next school year, is we can't go back and reteach all the things the students missed last year. There is a lot of research out there around other pandemic-like experiences. Hurricane Katrina comes to mind, when there were long periods where students were out of school. If we go back and reteach all the things we believe students missed last year, students will never get grade appropriate material and will never graduate with the skills that our system believes they need upon graduation. And so it's important that schools really take into account that we need to keep grade level content as students enter the year, but we need to differentiate, use small group instruction, use maybe one-on-one personalized instruction as well to help accelerate students and maybe things they might have missed last year, but also continue to provide them with grade level rigorous content to keep them on pace so that this is a blurb in the radar and not something that continues to haunt them and grow over the rest of their school career.
I mentioned in the introduction that Pennsylvania is allowing some students to, or excuse me, their parents to make decisions on whether to hold their child back a year. Dr. Beal, what do you think of that? I mean, is it appropriate for some students?
I think it's a personal decision, and I truly don't have an opinion one way or the other. I think each student is unique and different, and I like that it's the choice of the parents. And so it's an option for families. There's pros and cons to the option.
Lindsay Sturkey, how do you keep from labeling a student that may be ahead of the other students, had access to internet, or did well in a hybrid model, as compared to a student who maybe, you know, did not have that access and may be a little bit behind? How do you keep from labeling that student as somehow at a lower level?
That's a great question. And I think that's going to be a big challenge for school districts throughout this upcoming year as they meet, you know, within their leadership teams. to be quite honest, I'm not really sure of the best way that that will be able to occur. I think certainly, though, you know, as we talk about trying so hard to be very intentional about meeting students where they are, and, you know, maybe just acknowledging that obviously some students have been able to fare quite well and others have not. And, you know, we are still going to, you know, teach whatever curriculum we have for this year. If there are children who need extra support, we can certainly do all we can to make sure that they have that extra support so that they can still feel successful and on track with the rest of the class. If there are children who have done far above and beyond their peers throughout the last year, I mean, again, it's just support in a different way. But I would strongly recommend that districts, you know, not try to pigeonhole students into being less than or more than.
And also, yeah, a popular philosophy that's been popping up in many classrooms across Pennsylvania is this idea of establishing growth mindset among students. How do we help students understand that, you know, set goals and make progress towards goals, and you may not be where your peers are, but you're making growth and it's your own personal growth. And so that idea of growth mindset and establishing that in classrooms, I think, is going to be really important next year. And frequently monitoring student progress, because we know that there's places where students are really strong and there's places where there's challenges. And so honoring that we all have both challenges and strengths, and honoring that in the class.
Lindsay Sturkey, I want to get back to something that communities and schools of Pennsylvania, one of your priorities, and that is keeping kids in school. Absenteeism was a real issue during the pandemic. You know, probably for some older students, they may have had to go out and get a job. They may not return to school. How do we deal with that issue? I mean, it's a challenge in a normal school year to keep some students, some kids in school, but now it may be even a bigger challenge. How do we deal with that?
Yeah, that's going to be a huge focus for us in this upcoming year. And actually, we work with the Greater Johnstown School District out in Cambria County, and we were able to add, we're calling them re-engagement specialists. So we have one at the elementary, middle, and high school level. And their focus is just going to be going out, you know, looking at the attendance and truancy lists and going door to door to find these students and saying, hey, we really think that you should come back to school. You know, we understand that the last year and a half has been incredibly challenging. We understand for our older students that you may have had to leave school altogether to get a job, to help out with your family, take care of younger siblings. We know that you have had these insurmountable challenges, but if we can start to build a stronger relationship and you tell us what you need, you know, we will do everything that we can to get you back into school, at least, you know, just to get that high school degree. And then you can decide whether you want to enter the workforce, you know, military service, a trade school, a four-year college. You know, tell us what you want from your life so that we can help you to achieve that.
Dr. Harris, I know that you have talked about some school districts that have done well during the pandemic. Those that you've observed or have worked with, what have they done during the pandemic? What did they do during the pandemic, and what lessons can be learned going into the new school year?
Yeah, I think at least the ones that we've been engaged when they have a knowledgeable administrator that assesses where we are and be able to look at our current situation head on and not take the approach that I want to do business as usual. I think it's been said both by Lindsay and Lauren earlier. Being able to be flexible enough to use whatever assessment we use for students to establish their own personalized baseline as a way in which to chart their path toward growth. And so when I see this in school districts, those are ones that are doing the best. And those are, you know, lessons that we can learn from those administrators.
Something you said, though, strikes me that we as a society during this pandemic, we've kind of, from time to time, we will say we see some light at the end of the tunnel. And then we use the term getting back to normal. And I get the sense that many people, and I'm not just talking about schools, but many people thought or think that life will return to what it was like exactly before the pandemic. Dr. Harris, are you saying that what administrators, educators have to realize is that it's never going to be the same?
We are not going back to normal. That's my opinion. Normal is going to be changed as we move forward. This pandemic has changed the way in which we view each other, changed the way in which we operate in our communities, changed the way we interact with each other. And for sure, it's going to change how we deliver education, because how can it not affect change? So, you know, back to your original question, those administrators in those districts who are, I believe, who are successful and will be successful in the future will recognize this as a fact and then begin to use that to come up with perhaps non-traditional ways in which we can teach our students, to come up with innovative ways in which to teach our students. And if they're not willing to change, then they're going to be left in, you know, in the era of the dinosaur. I hate to put it that way. So we've got to be flexible. We've got to be innovative. We've got to be able to pivot, and to pivot not only at school level, but at a student level.
Dr. Harris, before the break, I took some liberties with paraphrasing what you were saying, but now being an opportunity for innovation, what kind of innovation specifically are you talking about?
Yeah, it is thinking outside of the box in how we deliver education to our students. Being able to, as we talked about, take those assessments and look at them as individual assessments of our students, and then be able to put together a roadmap. You know, at NASA, we didn't get to the moon because we said we're just going to go to the moon. No, we came up, we saw what the challenges were to get to the moon, and we looked at those pieces that would keep us from accomplishing that task, and we develop in a way innovative ways around that. So we're going to have that sort of almost scientific approach to education going forward. But what makes it really, and just finish this real quick, what makes this really different than a technology accomplishment is that you've got to deal with the individual communities and individual aspects of kids, of teachers, of administrators, and how they interact. And so this is going to challenge us in a very big way. And then the last piece I'll talk about, and I know we'll talk about it more, is how do we apply technology in an effective manner in order to be additive to what we're trying to do in our system.
Dr. Beal, you talked about looking forward, and I think all three of you have mentioned innovation. What does it look like going forward, and what kind of innovation, if you could just follow up on what Dr. Harris said?
Sure. I second so many of Dr. Harris's points. I'll add, I think now students really crave anytime, anywhere learning. So before the pandemic, we kind of thought of learning as happening within the four walls of the school building from 8 a.m. to 3 p.m., whereas we've really learned that learning can happen anywhere at any time, and we can really accommodate students' learning needs and really their interests by providing that anytime, anywhere learning. I also think we've seen a huge shift from teacher-driven instruction to more student-led instruction as a result of the pandemic. Students, you know, in our area, every Wednesday had kind of independent study where they were given assignments and could work at their own time and pace. And so empowering students where the teacher doesn't need to be the sole lecturer of information for students to learn was a huge transition in our classes, I think, for the better. And so I also think that, to tag along with Dr. Harris, you know, flexibility moving forward, I think we've shown our community, our caregivers, and our students that we can be flexible in what learning looks like. And so I think we're going to see more creative options, whether it's a hybrid schedule where students are able to work part of the day, take online courses, come into the school building for different courses or electives, attend college courses online. I just think we're gonna see a lot of flexibility rather than a full schedule in the school building.
Lindsay Sturkey, you have the unfortunate task of following up on those two answers, but I'll ask you the same question.
Yeah, I really couldn't agree more with what Dr. Harris and Dr. Beal have already said. But from my perspective, I think it will be very important for us to continue our idea of schools as a place for the community and to bring in community members from the outside who can also assist in education. We talk all the time about how it takes a village to raise a child. And I think more recently in school buildings, maybe we've moved a little bit away from that, but I think bringing that back would be incredibly impactful. I mean, our biggest thing is to really remove any barriers so that students can learn as best they can. And one thing that we really focus on is letting teachers teach. Our site staff, they're not teachers, but we can certainly do all we can to assist teachers so that they can focus on bringing high quality educational opportunities to our students and that they're not focusing on the child who is worrying about whether they'll have enough to eat over the weekend. You know, our teachers have been put through a lot over the last 16 months. This year, I'm sure, will be absolutely no different. And we want to make sure that they feel confident in teaching and in the job that they are actually supposed to do.
But Lindsay, you know, one of the things about education in not just here in Pennsylvania, but across the country, I mean, there have been implemental innovations, changes over the years, and technology has dictated a lot of it. I mean, who would have thought 20 years ago or even 10 years ago that every student in the state would have a laptop computer? I mean, and not all do, but many of them do. But still, much of this is ingrained from tradition, that this is the way we've always done it. Dr. Harris alluded to this earlier that, you know, he thinks that one of the things that has to change is administrators, educators who are not falling back on that. But something, an institution like education that has been so ingrained in tradition, how do you make those changes?
I think it's going to be really important for community members to really step up and be advocates, not just if they have, you know, their own children in the school, but just in their communities. I think, you know, we can certainly always say that the way to do things is the way that we've always done them. But I think the last year has shown us that isn't really possible anymore. Like just physically, it is impossible. So I would really hope that more community members really start paying attention to what's going on in their districts, whether that's talking about differences in virtual hybrid schedules, in-person schedules, what's going on in changes to curriculum. I mean, I think people should really start getting more involved in their local school districts and to advocate for things to be done differently and to be innovative.
I don't want to say it used to be, because in some communities it still is, that the school was the center of the community. Whether it was, you know, being proud of the students' academic success, their sports teams, when there would be social events, that the school was the center of the universe for communities. Are you saying, Lindsay, we need to get back to that?
I think in some ways that would be really great if we could do that, to keep, you know, to put a new spotlight on our schools as community spaces where everyone can go. Yeah, I think that would be a great idea.
And Scott, if I could add to what Lindsay's talking about, because I think it's really important. I don't think we mentioned on the program today, we talked about learning loss, but we haven't talked about the loss of educators and administrators within our districts. Teachers are leaving the profession, which just by that sure fact, we're going to have to think differently about how we deliver education. I believe it was Lauren that mentioned hybrid learning. I think Lindsay also mentioned that. I think that the way the education is going to be, it's going to be hybrid. And hybrid is going to allow us to have a multiplier for the loss of administrators and educators in our school, because now we'll be able to take that technology if it's used appropriately and be able to deliver support in the classroom and outside the classroom. And then the last thing I'll make, and I believe Lindsay made this point about having community leaders who are involved in our education program, because we're all going to have to do this together. We're all going to have to come together in order to help our educational system. And so that take a village comment that was made earlier, I love it, because it will take a village for us to get out of this environment that we're in currently.
You know, something I think about that on this program over the past few years, I've heard many business organizations, employers say that we can't hire qualified workers. They don't have the skills that we need. Many of them have responded by, you know, adding their voices to education. It sounds as if what the three of you are describing is that we need more of that. And not just the business community, not just employers, but we need a lot of people. I think, Dr. Bio, you mentioned, that we just don't need to hear the voices from those who have children in school. But it sounds as if what you're describing here is that, if you don't think we have, the qualified workers, then let's hear your opinion. What has to happen? What changes do we need? What innovations do we need? What technologies do we need so that we do have people who, kids getting out of school, going to college or a technical school, to getting further education so that they are prepared for the jobs of today and the jobs of tomorrow? Dr. Harris, is that what you're talking about?
Exactly. Thank you for bringing up corporations, because ultimately, what are we trying to do here with our students? We're trying to get them prepared to live outstanding lives, which means in the 21st century, where technology is driving everything that we do, they need to have a high quality education, not just an education, but a high quality STEM education. So here's my commercial, of course. This is what we do. This is if we are going to make sure that our students are prepared to take care of themselves and take care of their family and take care of their community. This is a tall order and a task that we must get right.
Obviously, Dr. Harris, with you being the CEO of the National Math and Science Initiative, and Dr. Beal, with you as a Pennsylvania STEM ambassador, science, technology, engineering, math, very important. I kind of think about this in context of the standardized tests that measure, for the most part, math and language skills, reading skills. But over the past year, a lot of things have happened, outside the classroom that, I've heard people saying that, we need young people to be more educated in civics, in government. We've also talked about schools maybe having to work with students when it comes to things in their home life and some of the psychological aspects of this. Basically, what I'm saying is that schools are being asked to do more than just writing and arithmetic. And that I wonder at this time, with the past 16 months so being so different, are they equipped to do that, Dr. Beal?
Oh, I was afraid you were going to turn that question on me. That is a complicated, difficult question to answer. Our teachers are amazing, and but many of us don't have technical experience or educational experience in that. And so we have social workers, but we rely on our community. We have guidance counselors who are amazing at supporting that. But I agree. I mean, we're trying to educate the whole child. And we all know that the academics are not effective if the student isn't well themselves. And so it is a really important part of our jobs as educators. That's about all I've got.
Okay. Lindsay Sturkey, what do you think?
I really couldn't agree more. I mean, not only do teachers, you know, may not have the technical expertise, but they may just not have like the emotional bandwidth to deal with one additional thing. So, I mean, again, I think, you know, to what we've talked about several times before is just that it is going forward, it will be so important for the community to become more involved in the school.
Dr. Harris, you know, I mentioned math and science, and as I said, the other guests have a STEM background as well. Obviously, this is very, very important considering the jobs of the future and where technology is going. But our other guests have said, wonder whether teachers are equipped with this. How do they get equipped with this?
Yeah. You know, there's one point I want to make, and I know we've said it and we've alluded to it, but our teachers need support. They need support, not only from the administration, but from the communities, as we've mentioned. And that support can come from many different places. I look at the teaching profession is the profession that moves this country forward. If we don't have qualified teachers teaching subjects that are relevant for educating our students, we lose as a country. And so when I think about this, we got to get this right. And I know I've been saying that over and over again, and that's why it really is so important. So how do we support them? We support them by paying them what's due. We support them by providing additional resources for them to do their jobs, either face-to-face in a hybrid model. We support them by making sure that they have the tools necessary to do culturally responsive teaching, which is so important. You know, we talked a lot about the different communities and the impact of COVID had on those communities. So we've got to help our teachers think about how they teach differently.
Dr. Harris, you alluded to this earlier, and I wanted to follow up. You said about so many teachers leaving the profession. Just saw a story last week about the number of education majors. That number has been falling in colleges as well. Why do you think so many are leaving?
They're not being paid in many states and many districts, you know, at the level of similar professions. And one of the things that we are pushing as the National Math and Science Initiative is those teachers that are involved in teaching STEM fields should be considered as STEM professionals, and as such should be paid like STEM professionals. But that's not the case, of course. If you go and you work for a high-tech company, you're going to, you know, your salary may be double of what you make as a teacher. There are just a lot of draws outside of the teaching profession that causes this sort of exodus that we're seeing. Plus the stress that we talked about of the pandemic on the teachers, and having to do things that they normally wouldn't have to do if we're still doing the traditional way of teaching. So what's the answer? Well, one of our answers as an organization is that we're involved in teacher preparation. So we have a program called You Teach, where we take students who are majoring in STEM in college and adding some additional coursework. And by doing so, they leave with their degree and their ability to teach. That's only one method, one program. We need many more that shore up teaching as a profession that it should be, as a high quality profession that it should be.
Dr. Beal, you formerly were with the Pennsylvania State Education Association. What are your thoughts on why teachers are leaving, and how do we attract, good people? When I say good people, the best students into the teaching profession?
I mean, I second everything that Dr. Harris shared. I think we as teachers got into the profession of education because we care about the well-being of students. And so that can be a heavy thing to carry on your shoulders. And so I think the demands on teachers are continuing to grow. The needs of students continues to grow. And it's hard. And so I think a lot of teachers just take that so internally that it leads to burnout. And I love Dr. Harris's suggestions, and I couldn't agree with all of them more. Just the compensation, I think, providing opportunities for teachers to collaborate, treating teachers as professionals, I think, is so important as well.
I want to thank the three of you for being with us today. Dr. Lauren Beal, Lancaster, Lebanon, intermediate year 13 and selected as a Pennsylvania STEM ambassador. Lindsay Sturkey, senior director of programs with Communities and Schools of Pennsylvania. And Dr. Bernard Harris, CEO of the National Math and Science Initiative. He's a medical doctor, medtech investor, and a former NASA astronaut. In 1995, Dr. Harris became the first African-American to complete a spacewalk. And I left some time on purpose, Dr. Harris. I would be remiss if I didn't ask what it feels like to walk in space.
You had to go there, huh?
I did.
It's incredible. I always joke and say it's like nothing on Earth. But imagine if you would circling the Earth every 90 minutes because you're traveling at 17,500 miles an hour at an altitude of 250 nautical miles above the Earth. It is an incredible view. And for me, I felt very blessed to have had the opportunity to see the Earth as I view our Creator seeing the Earth. When whatever your belief is, you can't help but be amazed by what you see, the elegance of the universe. And as I remember at the end of my spacewalk, looking down at the Earth, and then behind that was a sea of stars called the Milky Way Galaxy, I realized how important I was in this whole situation. And it not just me, but us as individuals. If we have the ability to live our dreams and fulfill those dreams, they not only help us as individuals, but they transform our communities, transform our mindset, a different way of thinking. And to me, going back to education, that's what educators do for our students. It enables them to fulfill dreams, and then those dreams themselves allow our community, our nation, our world to grow.
I knew you were going to take it to education. That's why I asked the question. Dr. Bernard Harris, thank you very much. Thank all three of you for being with us today. We got a little philosophical in our discussion today, but thank the three of you for being with us. I'm Scott Lamar. Have yourself a good day.